go to bed.
But we're gonna get unblocked.
Sometimes you see him out there and he's just fucking asleep.
Get a pillow, get a blanket.
No, I'm not a fucking dirtbag. Go to bed.
Make sure, try to look at the camera once for a thumbnail. Just like randomly. Just like, no. Look at it. You know, something.
All right. Yo, what's going on, everyone? And welcome back to another episode of Go to Bed. I'm your co-host, Fiki, joined with my co-host.
Getting stronger, JP.
Are you, though?
Yeah, dude. Everyone tells. I say that because everyone tells me at the gym, whether they know it or not, oh, you're getting stronger. And I'm like, no shit. Like, that's why I'm at the gym, you know? Like,
but you're not.
I'm getting stronger, dude. New PR today.
He's a big boy, though.
He's built, huh?
Yeah.
I got a little keg on me.
Well, that's all right. He's got the foundation for it.
Oh, yeah.
You're stocky.
Yeah, if I tried, I probably could fuck anyone up.
But you don't try.
That's a bold statement.
I'm just kidding. I know. That's a joke. I know. I just smoke too much, dude.
All right, before we get too far into it, most important thing, make sure to leave us a 5-star rating on the iTunes app. Leave us a funny review. You want to pull out your phone real quick?
Yeah.
5-star rating, but a negative funny review, and then we can do review of the week every week. We go to bedpodcast.com for everything relating to this podcast. We got our merch on there, Patreon or PayPal, all that shit, so you can support us in other ways. But most importantly, the best way to support us is just to tell a friend about the podcast. If we make you laugh or if you get something out of the ones with the guests on, make sure to share the episodes with your friends and help us grow organically that way. So, review of the week. We have, this one's titled Boring by Sleep App. And it says, bring the trash wizard back on the podcast with a thumbs down. 5 stars.
5-star.
So make sure to leave us a review so you can get on review of the week. Shout out to our sponsors at Walton's Coffee House on Instagram. JP, 2 weeks in a row that you remembered the food, dude.
Yeah, getting stronger. What can I say, dude?
Mentally, physically, everything, dude. So shout out to Chef Michael for keeping the boys fed. We got some burritos here and shit.
These are the best in Reno and actually Nevada, dude.
And actually the world.
Well, dude, you never know what's in Cali.
Never know what's on Mars.
Okay, Elon Musk.
We're about to find out, dude. And HarmoniousCBD.com, if you need any CBD rubs or drops or anything like that, use code GOTOBED at checkout for 10% off. HarmoniousCBD.com. So pick up some shit there. Make sure to support Walden's and Harmonious. Support the show. They support us. So return the favor.
Thank you.
Thank you. No, thanks for showing up today.
And let me introduce the guest. We got a special guest today, Ryan Hansen.
What's OG. Happening?
Dude,
you normally do this part. Okay. Tell us a little about yourself for people out there that don't know you, right? That's what you say.
That's right. First of all, let's get to Instagram because he just told us how much he likes Instagram.
Okay.
So plug your Instagram.
It's Ryan Hansen 775.
There you go. Easy to spell. Hansen with an E.
That's
not
right.
A Hansen. A Hansen.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right.
So yeah, just give the listeners a little rundown about kind of who you are, and then we'll go into your whole story later. But just cool. A quick summary, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, I am an ex pro freestyle moto rider. I've been moto my entire life. Started out with moto. My dad had a track in Carson City. He was the president of the Arena Cross Series, and I grew up racing with all the boys in Nevada. And I was more like into skating and snowboarding. I thought I was going that route. Freestyle moto came in. Miller, Mason, and the boys started making a little coin, and I jumped right in there with it. I had the connections through the old man, and it seemed like a good fit, and it went full into that for quite a few years. I kept doing that for a bit, and then that phased out, developed some pretty strong addictions for alcohol and drugs. Pretty much just a dumpster was, I had a few drugs of choice as the years went on, but, in the beginning I couldn't say no to anything. I was up for trying anything, and being freestyle guy, it was, especially in those days, it was really easy to like the harder you went, it was like you got more shit out of that. Like, and so if my skills, my chops weren't fully there as far as like, I had tricks and shit and I could move forward with it, but like my partying skills were pretty good.
Okay.
And, you know, yeah, I started that pretty early. So I was like, I thought I was good at it. But fast forward to some times just to keep it short. But yeah, I do that. And now I work in recovery and addictions as a coach. I didn't go the counselor route because I feel young youth can relate more to a coach and somebody that's more or less just been deeper than where they've gone with it. And it's just a sense they could talk to me a hell of a lot easier than thinking like, oh, well, we got this counselor we got to go to. And for the most part, they're full of shit anyways. So I work with that. I do various things within the recovery community. I live a pretty dope life right now after I got sober. I set it up to where I have very few bills. I work to keep me racing and riding and helping other people out. And it's a pretty clean deal. I just started doing ultra marathon running. And,
that's right, dude.
Yeah, that's a trip. That was a whole different world. Dude, we can talk about that one. That was intense. I just got done with my first full ultra 2 Sundays ago, and it was 37-mile trail run. And this is a guy that part of my leg's kind of fake and never ran anything over a mile than was required as a kid, like go around the track,
yeah.
You know? And I got this idea to do this, and I started training like probably 3 months before it. Went for it and did it.
What got you the idea? Did you see someone or a video? Or
yeah, you know what? Like all day when I do work, I do work sometimes. I stopped listening to music and I started listening to like iTunes U and just wanted to learn more just about not just addictions and everything, but just everything. And I was a fan of the Rogan podcast and he had David Goggins came on. And that fucking guy, dude, holy shit. Like, if you don't get stoked on that dude,
yeah.
You better go to bed.
Exactly. That's right, dude. That's perfect. That's so funny.
So I just sat there and I listened to him, dude, and I heard his story. And I mean, I shit you not, I've probably listened to it 15 times since then.
Uh-huh.
And he was talking about everything he's gone through. And then he just kept saying this ultra running. And it just kept going. And was like, what the hell is ultra running? And I swear these phones listen to what we talk about or what we hear, dude. So, like, that night, I'm looking on Facebook, and something came up for this event, the Big Chief 50K in North Star. I was like, oh, trail running, cool. All I did was hit register and signed up. I had no idea what 50K even meant.
Right there. You're just
I had no idea. I listened to that fucking guy, dude, and he got me so stoked. And you'll notice, like, people that get sober, too, and they get full, they're just, like, 100% into it, and with their sobriety and health and changing their life, like, they're just going to fucking do it. It's just the way it goes, and right. With me, too. And that was it. So I went for it, and next thing I know, I was like, well, what does 50K mean? And they're like, well, it's a 31-mile run. I was like, holy shit. I've never ran anything before, so I better start training. So
like,
I thought that was
a prize purse. You
know? Yeah, right? It was so I went for it, man, and it was the single hardest thing I've ever done.
Really? Number one?
Yeah. Yeah, physically? Yeah. And there was so much mental game to it, too, because like, I hit the wall at mile 20. Huh? Not only that, dude, I went fucking brain dead. Like, I missed a turn. So I went 6 miles off course, dude.
Oh my
gosh. Feel better because I wasn't the only kook to pull it.
Yeah.
Because this other guy, like, all I remember is, like, this dude was like, hey, have you ran this before? And then, like, I came back to Earth. And I was like, oh, shit, I have. And so it was like, I was off course that long. So I ended up doing 37 miles total.
Whoa.
But it was so emotional and just like, I don't run with headphones on. I want to be present and all. And how hard it was. And then just kind of everything I've gone through as an addict, everything I've overcome through it, it all just started boiling up. And when I went to the finish line, my buddy Jeff Seamus and Jamie Tech One and his wife and kids were there. And dude, I fucking collapsed. And I started just crying. Like, it was, like, such an achievement for me. And it was, like, every bone in my body hurt so bad, dude. And all I wanted to do was quit. But there was no fucking way that was happening.
Yeah. How long did that take you?
7.5 hours.
Holy cow, dude.
Yeah. And then you feel like a pussy because you read, like, the pros. I think the top pro did it in, like, 3 hours and 50 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know how fast he's going?
Yeah.
Like, fuck that guy.
That'd be so hard. Like, did you, what kind of shoes did you wear?
This is funny, dude. See, I have no idea, right? What I needed, just read some shit on the internet. I went to Big Five and bought a pair of trail running shoes for like $50.
There you go.
And I ran in those. It worked, dude.
Yeah.
Bought some blister socks, thinking that would be bullshit. Like, I figured my feet were going to be hamburger, but they actually worked.
Really?
Yeah.
What's blister socks?
It's just this weird fabric. A little, you'd think they'd be like almost like snowboard thick socks, but they weren't. Just this weird fabric, and it killed it. Worked out pretty good.
No issues, or did you?
Oh, my big toe's hammered, dude. It looks like I hit it with a hammer. Oh, like it's just black.
Yeah. Oh, damn.
I'm just waiting for the nail to fall off.
When I run, I get so weak. Sometimes I feel like if I was on a trail, I wouldn't be able to notice a rock or a root. Did you ever fall or anything?
I did once, and that was a funny trip because, like, Seamus and I were talking about it. I was like, you know what's cool? I was like, because people were falling because there's so many rocks, and it's just up in the mountains, dude. And your legs get so tired, so you start kicking rocks and going down.
Yeah.
This dude went down not too far in front of me, and it's like, these guys didn't grow up riding or you're skating or anything, so none of these fuckers know how to fall. So, like, when I fell, dude, I just head tucked and rolled, and we were good to go. This guy fell, and he ate shit, dude. Face down, spread out, like, they just take it.
Yeah. Yeah. I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, that was definitely an issue, but for me, it was like, I came out pretty clean.
Yeah.
So the whole thing was on the dirt?
Yeah. There was a couple just little bit of pavement stuff, because you take off right at the village of North Star, and you just head up. Mm-hmm. And there's like, you don't know where the fuck you're at, dude. Like, I'm looking around going, trying to piece maybe. Like, in the first 10 miles, you can see the lake, and then you get into some deep shit.
Damn.
Wow, dude.
Any wildlife? That was, like, crazy?
No, nothing. There's some of those things, like, when I was training for it, you'd be up at Spinner, and you're by yourself, dude, and you're kind of deep in there. It's like, what if a fucking bear or a mountain lion comes out? Like, what am I going to do?
Yeah.
But I'm trying not to think about it. I almost got bit by a rattlesnake like a month ago.
No way. How?
Fucking running, dude.
Just like it attacked you? But like.
No, I'm running through this corner and I just hear the rattle going and I look down and he strikes. He was hanging out like in the shade of a bush and I just went around a bend and it was real close to like single track. And I was like, holy shit. And it was a good size one too.
Dang, that's crazy.
Did you watch any like YouTube videos or anything on like how to run properly?
Not at all.
Or you just went for it?
I just went for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I started because I wake up at 4 in the morning and I go to the gym and it was like I was doing a little warm ups here just like on the bicycle a little bit and I was kind of in my head. I was like, maybe I should try to run a little bit on the treadmill. And I did it and it was working. So that got me to think that like maybe all the hardware in my leg isn't going to screw with me too bad. And so it kind of set me up for it because then I go to try to run. But the first few times I ran, dude, I just ran in like a pair of old school Vans.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like I have no idea what I was doing at all.
Yeah.
But I just knew that I wanted to do it on my own. Like I won't ever have a trainer. I won't ever have a coach, anything like that. I want to do all of this on my own. Mm-hmm.
That's cool.
Yeah. What a fucking story just from like the bottom of the bottom to then now that's like everything came out. At the achievement, you know?
It really did, and I didn't expect that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I knew I'd probably get a little bit emotional about it, but it was just, like, everything came out right then. I just couldn't hold it in, dude. And like,
that's sick.
I even walked when I was, I could barely walk, dude, and I went to go to the car, and I had to call a friend that's been there through me through the whole thing, and I just told her, I was like, fuck, I can't keep it in. I'm just bawling. Like, it was good, but I was so happy that I went through it, and I wasn't ashamed at all. I don't give a shit.
Yeah,
that's sick, dude.
And, like, I don't care if these old heads see me crying.
Yeah.
I don't give a shit. Next one, I probably won't, but.
That's
how it was, dude. It was a trip. Like, you'd think these people would be more welcoming, and they really weren't.
Why?
I don't know, man. I really
like,
don't.
What vibe did you get?
I got a vibe that were like, who is this tattooed up asshole? He isn't going to do shit. Because they were cool at first. Like, I had my sweatshirt on at the registration and everything. And then when it was time to go, like, I took sweatshirt off and I just had a tank top on. And then it was like, everybody's giving me this shit look. And then that first thing, like, the first person that talks to me is just like, well, how many have you done this year? I haven't done shit. Never ran any of these. And then they start looking down their nose, you know, like, oh, you're not going to make it. Like, what were you thinking kind of thing? Like, bullshit. You have no fucking clue what I've been through.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm going to do this.
Yeah, that's crazy.
No matter what.
Yeah. Did anyone else besides, like, your close friends and family give you props after?
Oh, yeah. Quite a few people. I had some people hit me up on Insta, and I think people that have followed like the recovery community of it, because mm-hmm. we're pretty, I don't want to use the word selective, but it's kind of a niche with the people that I work with. They're all moto or action sports people that are addicts. And so people through that, when they see things like that, they get super stoked, especially because we're people that have grown up riding, racing, skating, any of that. And so when they see that, that's like, that registers in their mind a hell of a lot easier than a guy like getting his real estate, got sober and getting his real estate license.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, that's physical. I know physicality. And that's, that gives them hope.
Yeah, for sure. Because they've trained before and then seen results, you know, and that's just the effect of it. So that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So take us back, like rewind to like the freestyle days. And like being on Warped Tour when it was fucking cool and all that stuff. And then like the whole story, you can go as deep as you want on like how you got like addicted to all this shit mm-hmm. and like the dark times okay. and what that was like.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. It was 99. I think it was 99. I did like my first jump show. And dude, shit was so janky back then. Like, to go do a jump show, I think the old man set it up. It was me, Miller, and Mason. And we were in Turlock at a monster truck show. And they didn't have a ramp. And they built the landing off of, like, one of the truck crunches shit. And it was only probably, like, 7 feet tall. So they had a semi-truck, like, almost like a tow truck. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's got the angle to it. And it's just a flat angle. There's no transition.
What the fuck?
And that's what we were jumping off. We laid grip tape down. So you're just hitting this thing and dropping off of it. So that was the first one. And it was just sketchy, dude. And like, my bike skills weren't that great. You know what I mean? I was like a junior racer. And like, I barely cracked intermediate before I started jumping. And so I'm just over jumping this thing and landing in flat each time and like doing no footed cans and shit and heel clickers. So like, that was the early days. And the early days were so much fun though, because they were like so janky, but there was no rules. Like, you could do whatever you wanted, and it was so much fun. And like early days, like Kenny Bell had a company, and we all did shows for him here and there. And those shows were great because we ran the whole deal, and you go jump, and things were starting to get a little bit of a ramp. He had like this wood ramp, dude, that was 6 feet tall, and that thing was fucking scary too. Like you're just hitting a wall, and then you're in the air. But by then, we're already starting to do like seat grabs and shit like that. And Byton started progressing really quick. He was always real quick to start learning new tricks, and did those for a few years. And then the old man, being the president of the Arena Cross Series, Feld had an indoor freestyle motocross series, mm-hmm. and there were contests, and it was like every weekend throughout the winter. They were called the IFMAs, and the old man got me in there, and I think Mason already did a few. Miller already did a few, because that's when everybody was already, I mean, yeah, they already did a few, because all of us were already doing freestyle, and I think Tierney was still racing, and I believe Mason was still doing arena cross. But these contests were going on, and I got into a few of them, and I never did great. I made some mains, some finals and shit, but it was like I didn't really care about winning or placing or anything. It was just cool. Like, you're flying out every weekend, and cool, event's over, let's go drink and party, and especially on Saturday night because you fly out Sunday, so it was like, let's bang chicks and let's get it going, you know what I mean? So that was fun. That went on for like 2 years, like every winter, that was your thing. And then you had to find your summer job. Mm. Believe it or not, it was almost harder to find a paying gig throughout the summer, especially in those early years, because like me personally, I was only getting paid a little bit by a few sponsors, but it was very low. So guys like myself, Byton, Bell, we all had to get summer gigs. And some of the guys went on like the freestylemx.com tour. And then there was a couple other guys did other things. And then like O'Brien had some shows we could do in the summer, but it was all hit and miss. Like if you didn't want to get a job, you had to like a real job, you had to figure it out. And luckily I got approached by, it was Kenny Watson at the time that was doing the team manager stuff for Warped Tour Moto. And Twitch and Scummy and those guys were already doing it for a few years, Manly and Deegan. And he got me on to do it. And I was like, oh, fuck yeah.
Who did?
For sure. Kenny Watson.
Oh, okay.
So he brought me on to do that, and it was the shit, man. Like, you guys did it, but, like, the years we did it,
yeah,
it was grimy, dude. Like, yeah. It was, you guys did it way rougher than we did, for sure, because you guys were in a van, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, fuck all that. We had a tour bus. Like, I don't envy what you guys went through. Right. Ours was a party. Yeah. You know what I mean? We got to have fun. But that was, I started drinking really early. Like, the old man, for the most part.
How old are you at this point doing the Warped Tour?
I was 19. And then, but, like, I started drinking at an early age. Like, the old man was never around, and it wasn't his fault. He just, you know, he had a job working for the Arena Cross, and he basically lived in Chicago during the winter. And so during the winter, it was just me all through high school, and that was it. It was just me at the house. So I had people crash in there. My house was a party, just nonstop. And with me, I had no, like, heroes. Like, I remember when I was a kid, and I always, like, telling it, when, especially when it comes to, like, recovery stuff, because you remember this point of, like, it's almost like a road. Like, I went this way, and this way was positive, and then I went that way, and this was negative. And it was, I was probably, like, 13 years old. I already drank a couple times, but Palmer was always coming around. And him and my dad were good friends. And my dad took him out racing a lot and got him when he was just turned pro and doing some things. And as, like, a young, impressionable kid, like, I'm supposed to like moto and these racer guys. And, like, that's what I was supposed to click with. Well, you bring these dudes with, like, blue fucking green hair and tattoos and shit and, like, listening to this loud, obnoxious punk rock. I was like, fuck that way. I want to go with these guys. And that was it. Like, right then and there, like, that was where my first step was towards. It was, like, I started looking up to, like, just degenerates and scumbags. And, like, I thought those guys ripped.
Like who?
Like, and then, like, my music shit changed.
Yeah.
It was, like, all the guys I looked up to in music were all junkies and just fucking assholes. Like, Gigi Allen, dude. I was into, like, the Mentors and just stupid music because it was so obnoxious, it pissed people off. And, like, I liked attention, but I liked attention for not doing good things. I liked attention for being an asshole.
Right.
Like, so I was good at it. Like, I thrived off that shit.
That's crazy.
So anyways, when I get a chance to go on Warped Tour, it was like, and the bands weren't any good. It was, like, in the early 2000s, so it was, like, all those fucking complicated haircuts and crying about their chicks and shit, and then do a scream and they think they're fucking hard. But, so, like, but there was also some bands, too, that, you know, were, like, the legends and guys that, and it's funny because I still keep in touch, and one of the guys helps me out quite a bit, Jordan Burns, that owns Moto Triple X, and he was the drummer Strung Out, and then the,
yeah, he was on it when we were on it.
Okay.
Again, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, uh-huh. Jordan's great, man.
Yeah.
I love that
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, we saw him at Mammoth.
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. And then Eric from NoFX, he owns the other half of Triple X, so it was, like, you have to like NoFX anyways, so you're there, and it was just a perfect setting because, like, I get to go hang out with all these bands and shit. And then, like, off the small stages, there was, like, legit punk rock bands that I was into. But, like, all Warped Tour was just a fucking party, dude. Like, how we didn't end up in the hospital is a miracle, dude. Because there'd be mornings, I'm still drunk in the morning, and I got to get on a bike and huck. Because, like, Twitch and Scummy couldn't do tricks off a small gap. So, like, if you had the ramp at, like, 75... they couldn't do tricks off that because they weren't used to that shit. So it was ramp to ramp, and we pushed that thing to 115, and it's on concrete.
Damn.
And it was gnarly, dude. So, like, it got bad. And then as, like, the drinking progressed, and but it wasn't – none of this was dark through Warped Tour. It was just kind of, like, laying the foundations for how things were going to go. And there was times, dude, like, I remember I was so fucked up, like – cocaine and everything. I met that when I was, like, shortly before Warped Tour. Like, MTV sent us down to do this thing in Mexico, and it was the first time I did coke. And I was like, fuck, this rules. Like, I can drink.
And you were only, like, 18 at this point? Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I can fucking drink harder. And, like, I'm even better with chicks. And, like, it's like, so I loved it. And where there was a lot of coke on Warped, for sure. Anyways, I forgot where I was going with that. But, yeah, so, like, the Warped was just, it was so much fun, and the thing was, though, it was really detrimental because all the guys that would go on, like, the FreestyleMX.com tour, their shows and their demos were, like, mock contests, but they had actual courses, like, three different ramps, dirt landings, and they had to go out and, like, throw down a run. It wasn't just a train of guys doing the same shit every day. So, like, Byte and Mason, just tons of other guys are, like, training all summer long. I'm getting fat and drinking all summer long. So when winter time comes, now it's time to go do contests. Like, I'm so far behind. I'm struggling, dude. And
they've just been, like, progressing all summer because of that.
Yeah,
the different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, okay. Absolutely. And they got good, dude. Like, yeah. I remember them coming back. I was like, fuck, I suck. So they did that, and that kind of screwed me up a bit. And then what started happening was, like, I kept breaking my wrist over and over again. And I wasn't making, like I said earlier, I wasn't making much money off of sponsors. And each time I'd break my wrist, I'd have to take time off. I'd come back. I'd suck even worse. And then I've got this chick that every motherfucker I know was telling me to have nothing to do with her. Everyone. From my old man, industry people, friends, everybody was like, do not. And I was like, well, she could help me with my money and, you know, get me sponsors and shit. And coming, she was in the industry. She worked for EXPN. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know any better. I was just a fucking dumb kid. So I moved her to Reno. And that was like when Warped was over and I'm starting to try to do contests and I kept getting hurt. And that was just like where everything just started falling, because now I'm a young kid that's been on his own for most of his life. And my mom was a junkie and alcoholic. So like later on when you do like the recovery work and figuring out who you are, and like bottom line, it was like she was much older than me. I was just looking for somebody to take care of me. Mm-hmm. And that's who I found. I found somebody like I can just still be a kid for the rest forever, you know, and like I don't have to worry about paying bills. Like I don't have to write the shit. She'll take care of it. So I limped on for a couple more years after that, still trying to do some freestyle shows and contests. And then we had a kid, or actually, I'm sorry, I don't want to go too far ahead. So freestyle was starting to really come to a close for me. And then I had to get a job. And I started a friend of mine that I used to snowboard with. He was painting houses, and I started painting houses with him. And that was like my first real job. And then it only lasted for a little bit. And then I had to go get like a job at a wedding catering place. And it was right by the airport of all places. So now like depression's hitting because I'm watching planes take off every day. And like I used to be on that fucking plane. And I was like, now I'm stacking chairs for this asshole. And so that started hitting me pretty hard. And then I was drinking a lot more. And now it's like you have this mentality that you're this somebody for all these years. And really we weren't shit. We just thought we were, because we got treated like we were like heroes, but we weren't shit. And but you still have that mentality, so you carry that on, and you still think you're partying like that, and you got this arrogance of you, and I kept going with that hard. And then, luckily, what happened is I started skating again. And then she got pregnant, we had our son, and then I was just skating a lot, like nonstop. And what the beauty of this thing was, like, all these dudes I was skating with, they introduced me to it, because, like, I started meeting these guys, and I saw these, like, older dudes just skating fast as shit, drinking beer, and, like, just slashing, like, just bull rippers. And I was like, dude, that's fucking rad. Just like a kid seeing Palmer, and I was like, oh, well, okay, I like this. So I started becoming friends with these cats, and I never told them that I did any moto shit or I had any kind of, like, career in that at all. They just, like, knew me, and they liked me for that.
Just from being around. Mm-hmm.
And then slowly the more people I met and the older people that have been around Reno and been around the town, they started putting it together and they started figuring out, like, wait a second, why does he know this person? Why does this guy know Ryan? And they started putting it together. So finally I told them what I did. And then they started treating me a little bit differently. Like, I was somebody. And I was like, God damn it, stop. And then we started partying a lot more with the skateboarders. Like, it started becoming like I would go try to be dad. Like, I would work all week. And comes Friday night, go to skate the pool, party all weekend. But, like, for the most part, I'd try to be home, like, Saturday late night. And Sunday was, like, be with the family, be with the kid, do that. Well, as it progressed, like, I had more fun going and doing coke on the weekends and drinking than being home and being with the family. So it's like now addiction's starting to kind of grab in. And that just kept going and going. And then it was like skateboarding started even phasing out. Now we were just partying and doing coke and running around Reno like assholes. And so now it's like I'm starting to get a pretty good problem with things. And she's kind of over it. And she wants to move to Northern California. And I'm kind of in a place where, like, I've been caught doing stupid shit. I was living this other life, like, with another chick. And it was, like, time to, okay, either do you want to still be married and be a dad? Or do you want to say, fuck this, get divorced, they go their way, you go your way, and, you know, we deal with the kid stuff. So I gave it the old college try, and we moved to Northern California. And that's where fucking just alcoholism just completely took over, dude. Like, you move this guy that's got friends and this guy's just constant busy dude out to the middle of fucking nowhere. Like, it's 30 miles north of Fresno by Yosemite up in the mountains. Like, total retirement village. And when I got there, it was like, what do? I drank. Right. And I kept drinking constantly.
All day?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, I couldn't find much work. So I came back here to work for a bit. And then I got back with my buddies and same old crew skate guys. And then it was even hitting it harder because now I don't have a wife to go home to. And I'm just here. So it kept getting harder. And then I finally ended up going back again. And then I started getting DUIs just like left and right.
In California?
Mm-hmm. Like, I think I racked up 4 total.
Holy cow. <man. laughs>
Did some time down there. But yeah, I started getting DUIs, man. And then like I remember when I finally realized like I'm an alcoholic.
When was that? Yeah.
It was around that time, probably 25, 26. It was like middle of the night. I woke up at like 2 a.m, sweating bullets and cold and shaking. I was going through, they call it the DTs, and I was just shaking.
What's the DTs?
Delirium tremors. You're basically withdrawing from alcohol.
Oh, because you haven't had any. Mm-hmm. That's why you wake up shaking. Mm-hmm.
I was shaking so bad, and I was like, holy shit. Okay. And then the only thing to help those is like when I first started drinking in the morning, like when I realized I didn't want to deal with hangovers. So I'd wake up in the morning and start drinking. And it just kept going like that. And especially when I didn't have anything, and I was like, I hated my life with my wife. We did not like each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We lived in separate rooms. We had this house. We had this kid.
That's tough.
Yeah, it was very tough. And it was very hard on the kid too, you know? And so it just kept getting worse and worse, and I just kept getting in trouble more and more DUIs. And then I went to jail for a while. And then when I got out, they had this thing where I had to have an ankle monitor on for 120 days. But it wasn't like house arrest. It was just alcohol monitoring.
They could tell if you drank.
Mm-hmm. They test your sweat like every 15 minutes or so. Mm. You can't ever hear it. Feel it. If it's really quiet, you could kind of hear it. So I did that, but then it was like I would take pain pills. I was like, I could be fucked up somehow. I won't tell that. And it didn't.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, I remember. I like pain pills. I was like, fuck yeah. I can just take pain pills.
So you just thought of it because you wanted something?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, we were at like a Super Bowl party, right? And everybody's drinking and shit. And I knew that was the thing. Like, if I drank while on it, that thing goes off, I'd get fucking roped that next day and go straight back to jail.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I started taking pain pills again. Like, fuck, I love these things. I forgot all about them.
Like, what pain pill?
Anything I can get my hands on, dude.
And where would you get them from? Like, you didn't have a prescription or anything. You just buy them off the street or something?
Fuck no, dude. I just steal from people.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Damn.
Like, any house I went into, dude, that was the first fucking thing I did was go to their bathroom.
Whoa.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Lots of times, too.
Yeah.
Lucked out, dude. There'd be some people, like, one dude was a dentist, dude. It was, like, fucking hitting the jackpot. Got that guy's whole thing of fucking Percocet, dude. And then, like...
And he didn't notice anything or what?
Fuck if he probably noticed, did. At some I'm sure point, he did. I just didn't give a shit. By the time he did, I was out of there.
Yeah.
And it was like, I wasn't going into stranger, just like go to that house and check it out. Yeah. Like, I'd be working in there or something.
Right.
And then like, I'd have it all dialed, dude. Like older people keep their meds in the kitchen and then younger people have their shit in their bathrooms.
Oh.
So it's like, I'd fucking sneak. Oh shit. Perfect. That out. But it was never like I was addicted to this shit. I just liked fucking taking them at that point.
Like, did you have to read the bottle, or could you know by looking at it?
I'd read the bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You know what's what, like hydrocodone, you got your Vicodins and your Percocets and the oxycodones and shit.
Yeah.
And so it was just, like, I liked that. But then when I got the ankle monitor off, I could drink again. So I started drinking again. But I had this plan that I was like, all right, something's got to change, you know what I mean? Like, I got to figure it out. Like, this marriage shit isn't working. So I came back to Nevada, and I got all my shit together, right, and like 2 big OGO bags, and I jumped on a train. And I got on a train, piss fucking drunk, dude, came straight to Reno with like these hopes of changing, but I'm an addict, dude. So I get picked up by my dickhead buddies at the train station, and I go, take me to fucking Shays. And I don't give a fuck, fuck them. So take me to Shays, right? And... because I knew what would happen. I knew I could get coke right away, and I knew I could fucking party. And that's where I went, straight there. And they're like, well, what's the deal? Like, we don't really want to, we'll party for a bit. And I was like, yeah, I don't give a shit. Just take me home in the morning or something. And by then, like, now they're open 24 hours a day. I was like, sweet, I can just fucking stay. So it was my first day back.
Holy cow, no first sleep, few hours. No, huh?
Yeah, first few hours back, just fucking, there we go. I had one in my hand within 20 minutes. I think probably even quicker than that. So now I'm just doing blow, dude, and going for it. And so that was a good welcoming, like, back home. I go back, and I'm living with the old man. And he found out because it was like somebody posted a thing on Facebook, and a picture of me, and I was like, oh, shit, well, where's he at? And I know where he's at. And so it's kind of already starting on the wrong foot. But now I've got this, okay, now we got that out of my system kind of thing. So I was drinking and shit. And then I met my girlfriend that I was with for, I want to say 4 years. We'd known each other since we were kids. And when we got together, it was fun time. You know, we'd party and shit. But I was secretly hiding a heavier addiction with the alcohol. Like, I'd sneak booze in because I wouldn't get drunk enough. And it looks a little odd if you're just having a casual night drinking wine and you're fucking sipping on a bottle of vodka. So I'd keep that kind of shit hidden.
Yeah.
And kept getting more and more caught, dude. And the alcoholism just kept getting worse and fucking worse, dude. And then I got put into a couple of different places. Like, I got put into a behavioral health center because it was just like, it was getting out of hand. I kept taking off and coming up to Reno and going to the same place and doing coke and shit and being up for a few days.
Taking off from where? From California?
Carson. No, I was living in Carson at my dad's house. Sorry. Yeah. When I first came back to Reno, it was, I stayed in Reno that first night, but I've been living in Carson since.
Oh, cool.
And so I'd always come up here because I just knew that I could do whatever I wanted up here.
Right.
And I had enough, like, old school friends to where, that were here that were all badasses, and, like, I could get away with a lot of the shit up here. And I kept doing that, and she was going through it with me, and now it was like, we got a problem. You can't be drinking. So I kept trying to get sober, right? But I'd always, like, if I felt like I couldn't get caught, I'd drink.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, well, nobody really knows if I'm on pain meds or not. So I started doing that same shit again, like that whole same routine.
You'd steal?
Mm-hmm. And I'd just get all that shit. And so I was taking that, and I went like almost, because after I did the behavioral health center, like that was fucked up, dude. Like, that was my first like welcoming to like what detox is for people.
Yeah.
And if they, for people out there that don't know like what detox really is, it's bullshit. I mean, there's things you need to do, and there's right ways and wrong ways of detoxing somebody off of opiates, alcohol, barbiturates, any of it. But what this place, a lot of these places do is they just load you up so much of all this shit, so you're not feeling your withdrawal symptoms, you're not feeling the pain of any of it. You're a zombie.
Oh.
Yeah, for like 3 days. In like 3 days, you're out of it, and the shit's out of your system, and now you're just this walking fucking blob.
Whoa.
And so that was my first introduction to that. So I was like, I don't really want to go back there.
Yeah.
So then what happens after the zombie syndrome wears off?
And you start getting your head back a little bit, and then you start telling people what they want to hear as far as like, yeah, I want to get cleaned up, I want to get sober and shit like that. And it kind of happens with everybody that goes into it.
Uh-huh.
And they just, I mean, within a month or so, they go right back out and doing their same shit.
Because it just like numbs them.
Yeah, yeah. And they don't learn anything from it. This is the thing I've learned with treating addicts and alcoholics and myself is that no one is going to make anybody want to get better unless they want to. Unless they got some little bit in them to make them want to get better, it's just not going to fucking happen. So now I'm taking a lot of pain meds, but everybody thinks I'm sober. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, I'm able to hide it really well. And the problem was is that you get on these pain meds for so long, and I was always thought I was special because, like, I never withdrew off of them. And then I started taking methadone. And methadone is what they give heroin addicts to come off of heroin. Which is insane, because if you take enough methadone, it's harsher than heroin. Yeah, yeah. And I found that out because I was like, I took a few of them. Like, whoa, this is just like, because I've already shot up dope before that.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is like shooting fucking dope.
Whoa.
And I'm like, and it's just a pill. I don't have to be in with the grime, dude. I don't have to tie off. Like, I can just take a fucking pill, a couple pills, and we're good.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it. I just knew that it got me higher than the rest of this shit. So I was like, I was fucking stoked. And I had a lot of it. I'm not going to say how I got it.
Yeah.
But I had a fucking lot of it.
Dang.
And I was like, fuck yeah, dude. I'm cool with the chick. Like, she just thinks I'm moody. And the old man thinks I'm cool. I'm sober. Like, fuck yeah, we're good. We got this, dude. And then I ran out. And I remember this night because it was like the first night I realized I was like, we got a deeper problem now. Like, I was getting tattooed. And I was squirming like a bitch, dude. And like, when opiate addicts, when people take a lot of pain pills, their pain tolerance is very low. So So
like, after or just?
Just always. Always. Yeah, yeah. Because every little thing they know gets taken away from a pain pill. So like any little hurt, scratch, cut hurts a lot worse for an opiate addict. So getting tattooed was fucked. And I was moving around everywhere. And then I was out that night. And the next morning I woke up and I was like, I had the flu. With opiate withdrawal is basically take your the worst flu you've ever had, triple that shit.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and you will not sleep. It's not gonna fucking happen. Your legs are just like red ants crawling on your legs. So I was like, that was my first thing. I was like, uh-oh. Well, maybe I'm just getting sick. So I got a bunch more that night. Hook up, we're good. So I had like a month left of that setup, right? Same fucking time the next month, same shit happened. So I started looking into it, and I was like, I realized and I found out that methadone is gnarlier to withdrawal than heroin. And it stays in your, it's got a half-life of 6 to 8 days in your system. And that can go up to like 30 days because it gets into your bones. So like typical heroin withdrawal lasts anywhere from 4 to 7 days. Methadone withdrawal can last a full month, if not longer.
Yeah.
And it's harder.
Like those pain, those that leg pain?
Well, methadone, yeah, methadone's a different animal than like Percocets or anything like that. But yeah, and it was intense as shit. And so the first couple times I was able to hide it, like, oh fuck, I just get sick. And then hopefully if nobody was around, like I knew that I could drink. And this is all, I'm supposedly sober this whole time too.
People still think.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I knew if I drank, like I wouldn't withdraw so bad. So I'd be able to hide that every now and then. So I kept doing that shit for probably another, I don't know, maybe 6 months.
Did you ever have a moment where you would go to sneak a drink and like double think it and like, ah, like.
No, fuck no.
You just did it with that. Yeah, you just.
Any chance I could, dude. Like, if my chick and I were out at the restaurant or something and she went to the bathroom, I'd get up fucking quick, dude, because I knew she couldn't, if she was drinking and she couldn't smell the shit, like I knew she couldn't smell it on me. So if she went to the bathroom, I'd get up to the bar real quick and go to her shot and sit back down. And like, I've just been sitting there while she was in the bathroom. Oh, yeah, alcoholics are sneaky fuckers, dude.
Dang. You're just thinking already before she went to the bathroom.
Oh, yeah. Any chance you can, for sure, 100%. Like, that's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you get, that shit gets built into you, too. So it's like, that's the first thing you think when you go to anybody's house, too. What's in their what's in their medicine cabinet? You know what I mean? Like, you start figuring that shit out, and you just become a real grimy bastard.
Is there a lot of people with, like, I was thinking, like, how often would you find pills, like?
Oh, that? Fuck, all the time.
Really?
I rarely struck out.
There's just always people with pills like that?
Especially older people.
Oh.
Yeah, older people, they get prescribed that shit very easily for back pains.
And you just, you know, you have one thing done, and then you take two or three of them, and then it's like, oh, I don't need these anymore. Mm-hmm. And then you just have a bottle of them sitting there until next time. And you have another bottle of them sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And especially with older people, that's like the case, a lot of the cases. Well, most fucking normal people, yeah, they take it as directed. And for the most part, they start feeling better after a week or after, you know, half a week, and they don't need it anymore.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot of households with that shit. Put it this way. There's a study out just recently, and there's an estimated, as far as the population goes, it's addicted to opiates right now. And we just hit 25 million.
Damn.
Isn't our country like 400 million?
Like 360, I think. But so 25 million is a lot of fucking people. That's a lot.
Yeah. So, yeah, let that thing sink in for a little bit. So there's a lot of pills out there.
Holy cow.
So anyways, I kept doing that shit. And I remember what happened is I knew I was running out. And I was riding and racing moto and shit.
Would you be high and ride?
No. I couldn't pull that one off.
Oh.
But the minute I got off my gear, I was popping pills. Fuck yeah.
In like your car or something?
Oh, yeah. And like, oh, yeah. I'd do it at fucking – we went down to Bishop to ride. And like everybody's wondering like why I wouldn't ride so much. Like, everybody'd still be riding, and I'd be done for the day, like, after, like, three sessions. I'd be like, well, fuck, I just want to pop, because I knew I could pop my pills after that and be good to go.
Oh.
And I already raced Mammoth, I think, after that, and then I was starting to race, and I was like, I've always loved racing, dude. I love it so much more now. And we went to these people that I just met, and her name is Ingrid Tanner, and she actually helped save my life. And what happened was they were going to this event down in Oatfield, and I didn't know them very well, and she was like, hey, you know, if I can't drive this trailer, and if you can drive us down there, I'll pay for your stay and your entry and shit. And I was like, oh, totally, cool, I'll go. And then I look up, I was like, fuck, I don't know if I have enough shit to get through the weekend without withdrawing.
Of those hardcore pills?
Yeah, yeah. So I was trying to expand it. I was like, fuck, what am I going to do? And I'm like, I might be able to make it work. And then I found some Vicodin and shit, and like, that's fucking nothing. But so I was like, I could make it work. So we get down there, and I'm feeling cool. I'm fine. Nothing's going on. I take one that night just so it's like withdrawals won't come on. That night, the storm came in, dude, and it just rained, just pissed rain all night. You wake up, dude, and the whole track of Oatfield's just covered in rain. And she had this dude, and it was like her kids and shit. And so they clipped practice that day. And I was like, ah, there's no way they're going to run a race. So I was like, you know what? I don't know these fucking people. My chick just bailed on me. Like, she doesn't want anything to do with me. So I'm already just like in that kind of like fuck it mood. So I was like, I don't know these people. I'm going to start fucking drinking. And I did. And I hit it hard that night, dude, way hard. And everybody was there, like, but I didn't give a shit because I didn't know there's like all the Testa people, all that. They were there watching it all go down, but I just seriously didn't give a shit. I'm like, fuck it, I'm over it. So that all went down hard, and it lasted for 2 nights. But like when I woke up, I started withdrawing hard as shit. Like, whoa, what happened? Why am I withdrawing so bad? What the fuck is going on? This shouldn't be happening. Like as an addict, you have things pretty staged out. Like you know when shit should hit. And I was like, I had no idea why it hit so hard so early. So obviously the Sunday got rained out. So we went to another place and I just drank the whole fucking time. Just constantly. And now it's like the old man called me and he knew I was drunk. He could hear it right in my voice. And so it was like, now the cat's out of bag. Everybody knows Hansen's drinking again. So there's nowhere to hide anymore. And it actually felt really fucking good. But I just have to admit that now I'm with my huge pill problem too. And what happened was is she came, my girl that I was with came to check in on me. And I was withdrawing so bad and I was home. And I had a bottle of vodka, and I had found some pills, and I snorted them up, and I nodded out, right? And she came into a bottle of vodka and a plate with a rolled-up dollar bill sitting there, and it was like, holy shit, uh-oh. Well, now, and then I just fessed up, like, I've been on this shit this whole time, fuck you, just asshole attitude. And so now it's really out, everybody knows. And now I'm starting to get hit with some consequences, like the family's like, fuck you. Uh-huh. You know, you've lied to us this whole time. You're just a piece of shit. And I don't blame any of them for it, of course, you know. And so I had this idea. I was like, fuck it. I'm going to kill myself. Because I was already, like, I already hated myself just deeply. Like, I never, you know, I just really did not like myself. And I had a gun, too. And it wasn't, like, the first time I thought of killing myself. But it was the first time it was ever this bad. And, like, I felt this hopeless. But it wasn't cool enough. Like, in my mind, it wasn't cool to shoot myself. In my fucked up head, it was cool to fucking OD. It's like, I can do that. All right, cool.
Like, look more at, punk rock.
Yeah, yeah. That's totally what I was going for, dude. It's like, fuck, shoot yourself. You just leave a mess. You OD, it's like, fuck yeah. And it's just so stupid. But you're that's in that. So it's so dumb. But so that's what I did. And I was like, fuck it. All right, cool. I saw how much money I had. Like, that's enough to do it. Came straight to Reno, and I went hard. I stayed in the same bar for 4 days straight, right? Never leaving.
No way.
Yeah, what fucking bar lets somebody sit there for 4 fucking days? Only I want to fucking Reno. Call them out, but
yeah, it wasn't choice. maybe we'll do the tech one review on that.
we could do that.
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
That'd be a good one. So yeah, who the fuck lets somebody do that, right?
Right.
And these are people that know me. I'm not just a fuck. These are all people that know me, have known me for a long time.
Uh-huh.
I'm doing everything, dude. 4 days, I haven't had a bite to eat. All I've been doing is cocaine and drinking. And people thought I was on meth because I was able to just hold so strong. I was like, nah, I'm just doing that much. And I just kept going. And just anything anybody had, I'd fucking take it. And just kept. Yeah. And it wouldn't happen, dude. Like, I, my heart would not stop. I was trying so fucking hard. Finally, they tell me to split. And I go down the street, and this lady that helped me out as a lot as a kid used to own Out of Bounds board shop.
Oh yeah.
So Kathy lived down the street and she was always kind of like a mom to me. Like she'd known me since I was a little kid and her house was down the road. So I was like, fuck, this is the only place I could think of going to. So I go there, right? And she's not there. So I break into the place through the window.
No way.
Yeah. And right when I walk in, dude, like I'm shaking now because I haven't had a drink in probably a good couple hours. Shaking so bad. And I look around and there's just booze. I'm like, fuck yeah. And then I looked at my sock and I had a bag of Coke too. I was like, cool. We'll just stay here and booze up and come back to life a little bit, maybe sleep a bit and go back and try her again. So I guess I don't remember calling Ingrid, but I did. And I woke up to her kid just jumping on my chest, just beating the shit out of me because I wouldn't respond. And finally I woke up and there they were. And they're like, we got to take you. You got to go to a hospital. You got to go somewhere now. We have to get you somewhere.
Yeah.
And I can barely move, dude. And for a guy like me, like when you hear the word cops, especially if someone's been some time, like you get the fuck out no matter how bad you feel. Somebody called the cops that I broke into the fucking place. And the one kid had to break in to come get me because I wasn't answering the door. So I hear cop, I fucking split. I was out, dude. I was fucking gone. Like, where'd he go? He's fucking out of here.
What the?
So finally, they take off. It's all good. They're getting me to a hospital. I have a seizure on the way to the hospital.
Holy shit.
Yeah, and I start nutting up and shit, and I kind of start settling down a bit. And I used to jam rocks up my nose.
Like real, like
coke rocks? Rocks? Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
coke rocks.
Like I used to jam up my nose so hard because I couldn't sniff anymore. But if I jammed that fucker up there hard enough, it would dissolve, right?
Ugh.
So I had sneezed and that thing fell out and just ate it quick. Just, nah. And yes. It was like Popeye and spinach, dude, because like that, I was just fucking, all right, what's up? And she looks at me like, what the fuck did I just witness? This kid is fucking done. And takes me to the hospital. They inject me with a bunch of shit. They find out what all I got in my system. I've got heroin. I've got ecstasy. I've got cocaine. I've got booze. I got assorted painkillers in me.
Whoa.
And none of that did it. And so I get out of it and I finally leave. I go to my aunt's house. And I stay there I slept for 2 days. Found her Valium, dude, and popped a bunch of them and slept for fucking 2 days. And then at that time, the old man, you know, everybody's over me anyways, but I convinced him to let me come to the house, and he was dealing with problems with my grandfather, and he had to go out of town. So now he left and I'm back at the house and I'm just going, nothing's changed. I still feel like this. Like I still hate myself. This isn't working. So I looked at the bank account again, went back to Reno and did it again, 4 straight days again.
What was the time between first time and second time, 4 straight days?
2 days.
2 days in between that?
Mm-hmm. So I went back for it again, right? And then they're kind of, people I know are catching on, like some tattoo artists I know in town, they're like, I get what you're doing, dude. You need to help. And at this point now, I'm just so fucked up, but I'm having fun. Fuck you. You don't know shit. Fucking beat it, kook. And that's just how I was about it. They're just trying to help. And it just kept going on, and then I remember I snorted some shit in the bathroom and immediately felt different. Like, what the fuck was that? So I boned out of that place. I had nowhere to go at all. And I'm driving in my truck, I'm driving too, and I knew I could go to Seamus's house. And poor Seamus, I feel so bad for the guy, and I still do to this day, even though it's like it's been so long, but still it's like he's never had to deal with anything like this at all. Never even close. And I'm hallucinating so bad. I feel like I got this chick that's in the passenger seat of my truck with me. And I'm talking to her the whole time on the way to Seamus's house. And I'm talking as I'm walking up. He could hear me in the house as I'm walking up to the door. And he's like, who the fuck's with you? I'm like, I don't know these people. And he's like, there's nobody there, dude. And so he cleans me up, everything. And I ended up staying there for a few days. And I just felt so fucking bad because he doesn't know, dude. And then I started drinking his booze and shit. And then he had to go hide it all. And I couldn't put him, I guess, like that rationale thought of mine in my head, like where I could still be a decent human being. I saw what I was doing to him. So I split and went to another friend's house that I knew could take care of me. And all this time, Ingrid's starting to talk to Sick Recovery to get me a spot in there and try to figure out how to pay for this because there's no fucking way a family's going to pay for it. The only way that shit's going to happen is if she starts pulling some grassroots and working with like old industry sponsors, just anybody that has ever known me. So she just hits it hard. Jamie was a big help in it. And she goes for it hard, dude. And next thing I know, I spent 2 weeks just drinking my face off at this guy's house waiting for the go-ahead and the plane tickets. We finally got him. And I went back east to Sick Recovery, and that was like the beginning of the start of like what's going to be my life.
Sick.
But it wasn't without like some restraint on my half because I had nowhere to go. Right. I didn't want to get sober though. I just knew something had to change and maybe I could learn some things here. And I figured, well, fuck, I'll get back into riding, dude. I'll get good at riding again and I'll work on this recovery thing. And thank Christ it didn't work like that and that I got hurt so bad within the first month and my leg injury was so bad that there was a chance of amputation. And this is just a month into it, dude, and now I'm off all the meds, all the pain pills, everything's out of my system. And now I'm right back on them again because I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, multiple surgeries to put this leg back together, and now I'm in fucking treatment. So he put it together. He's like, you can't just get off of them, so we're going to figure it out. And it took me a good, almost a month after all that, and I was still pissed, dude. Like, why the fuck? And, you know, I wasn't ready to be sober and figure it out. And then something just clicked, man. He came to me, and we talked, and he was honest. He was always honest with me. Kevin Cobb, who owns Sick Recovery. Okay. He's my mentor now. He's like a brother to me. And he just laid it out the way it was. Like, you know, you felt like you should die, and sometimes, and when you're depressed, you kind of can talk yourself into a lot of shit, but you should be dead no matter what. Like, you should not be alive.
Yeah.
And he laid it out so well, and was like, that day on, fuck it, we're going to do this. We're going to figure out a way to live without any shit.
Nice.
And it was just the start of it all. Like, they said I wasn't going to walk in 6 months. For 6 months, I said, fuck that. We're going to walk in 3. And it was like, that was the first, like, little hill to climb.
Nice.
So we started doing it, man, and I just started fucking going for it, dude.
And did you?
Yeah.
Nice.
And I did, and I've been sober ever since.
How long ago was that, like, the couple four-day benders? When was that?
Almost 3.5 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I've been sober 3 years.
That's sick.
Yeah, yeah.
And so now after Sick, like, when did you come back from being at Sick Recovery and you're good to go? Like, how was that?
I was, his program is 6 months long, which is very needed. And treatment for addictions, you don't get anything done. Like, a lot of treatment centers are 30 days, 60 days. That's fucking bullshit. Dude, that's detox. Like,
mm-hmm.
Your brain doesn't start coming around for a while. It needs to be long-term treatment, and that's the way it goes. It's just, there's no other fucking way. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
And so I spent 6 months with him, and he was like, well, what do you think you want to, you know, he started kind of laying into my head, like, what we should be doing, like, what do you want to do? And I started kind of kicking around the idea of working in recovery and working and giving back, you know, and seeing how bad our sport is with people that get hurt at a young age, because we are all, it's just a matter of time, man. And you either are stoked on pills when you get them, or you're just like, fuck, it gave me a tummy ache and I'm out.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us would get stoked on them and they just go that route. And so I was like, yeah, I kind of want to, you know, start kicking around. He's like, well, why don't you go see what traditional treatment is like? Traditional treatment meaning you get in trouble, you go to a 30 to 60 day treatment for center, and then you go to a sober living. So he suggested that I go to a sober living house. Most people that go into sober living house have like a month of sobriety, 2 months of sobriety. And so when you go to a sober living house, it's like a bunch of men living together, got to get jobs. There's people that are in IOP, which is intensive outpatient program. So they don't have to work right away because they got to go to these programs every day. So he's like, why don't you go check that out? So I'm like, fuck it, what do I got to lose? Cool. Save some money together, and I went to Jacks Beach, Florida, and moved in. I just went like this, dude, on the internet, and that one will work.
Really?
Yeah. And so I went there, and then I saw the ugly side of addiction treatment.
Like traditional?
Yeah, I saw the fucking, what I call the enemy, and that's basically what's governed is treatment, and not only that, is like sober living goes, it's all a moneymaker. When I saw how much money was being made at this place, I was fucking disgusted. Like, this guy owns 5 houses in Jacks Beach, Florida. 2 of the houses are women houses, and the rest are the men's. It's a house much like yourselves here, but there was 15 guys living in this one house.
Whoa.
Yeah, and the way you get in is $900 a month. It's $900 for your first getting in there, right? And then $700 a month on.
Okay.
You piss test, which is, I'm a big, I'm, of course, you got to keep people accountable. So, of course, piss test them as much as you want. You got to piss test them a few days a week. And then not only that, they just beat this AA model into your head so hard that I don't care who you are. You're getting hit over the head with this thing nonstop. You're going to get burnout. A lot of these dudes get stoked on it and they're like, okay, we're all doing something together. And that's great. I love that. But when you're making them go every single day and then sometimes twice a day, every single day, these young guys are going to get burned out on that shit. So I started watching that. And I watched this guy that's making all these money off of all these fucking addicts. And I watched one kid that was going, hey, I'm going to use, and just talking shit. And I don't have it. I've grown a lot since that time till now as far as my mentality of dealing with people. And I wasn't in like the full helpful mode at that point. I was still learning a lot myself. And me, I still had that asshole mode. And like he kept saying that finally, I was like, shut the fuck up and go do it then. Fuck. This rich kid, you know what I mean? And he went and did it. And I was like, oh, shit. So here's where I'm getting to the ugly part of it is that he goes out, gets some dope, shoots up, comes back. And this kid's parents had a lot of money. They send him to their partner's affiliate detox, which whatever. So they go to the detox. They detox him out. The owner of the house sends me and a couple other guys to go pick him up from detox and bring him back to the house. So that's another charge for him. So they bring him in, right? And they charge him the same amount of money. They get him back in. 2 days, 3 days later, he goes out and uses it again, and he's out. So I'm like, well, that's kind of cool, though. You know, they gave him a chance. I'm like, whatever, it costs more money. That's kind of cool, though. When I got pissed off is that in my room I shared with another kid. He was probably like 18, 19 years old. He went out and smoked some weed and popped dirty that night. This kid didn't have any money. They kicked him out of the fucking house at 11:30 at night. In Florida, and his parents lived in Ohio. Didn't do shit for him.
Because they knew that they wouldn't pay.
Mm-hmm. That's when I was like, fuck this. And I just realized there's got to be something to be done. And as a whole, yeah, me and my people are not going to make a huge dent. But if we can make a dent in the industry that we're a part of, and the industry that we love so much, that's what we're going to fucking do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's when I was like, all right, cool. Fuck these people. Yeah. Fuck what they're doing. And it's not that I'm against AA. And things like that. It doesn't work for me, and it doesn't work for a lot of people. I don't believe in it. But I'm also at the same side, like whatever works for you, and if that keeps you going, bitching.
Right.
We're cool with that. It's just, it's not my thing, and I don't believe in it. So spent 2 months in that place, and when I decided, I was like, it's time to go back to Nevada, and everybody's telling me not to. Like, why would you want to come back here? And they don't understand, like, the growth I've gotten, and it's like the confidence and shit I've gotten to myself. Like, I'm not scared to go back and face all the people I fucked over. That's part of, like, if I'm running away from these same people, what am I not going to face in the future?
Right.
So I just threw myself, fuck yeah, I'm going back. And the first time right when I got back, it's the weekend of my dad's event that it's coming up next month, the flat track races in Carson.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm thrown in front of everybody that I knows exactly what the hell's been going on with me. And I fucking faced them, every single one of them. And there's a thing that to be said for when you do, like get over shit and forgive yourself for everything you've done wrong and you start getting self-love. You don't give a shit if you don't get, like, that they understand that you're sorry kind of thing.
Right.
You said your piece. You're cool with it. If they're not, that's cool. They don't have to be like.
Yeah, that's on them though.
You know what I mean? They don't have to forgive you. And I'm sure there's plenty of people out here that are just like, fuck that guy for life. And that's cool. Honestly, that's your choice, man.
Fortunately.
And so I ran right back into it, man. Cool. I want to see everybody. And then slowly it was just like getting more integrated to people. Jamie's like, he's one of my best friends, man. His family is basically my family. And he was huge when I first got back. Like, I was just with him all the time, going to the races all the time with Ollie. I wasn't even riding yet because I didn't think I could with my leg. Seamus is like, you're fucking riding, dude. He brought me a bike down to MMX, and I got on a bike for the first time. I was like, oh, my leg kind of works.
It didn't hurt?
Yeah, a little, but it was like, we could work with it. And then Jamie, dude, he's like, hey, call Tony Evans. He's got a bike for you. Well, I don't have any money, dude. He's like, oh, we're going to figure it out, dude. Call him. Call him 2 days later. I went and grabbed the bike. And it was dude. It was like, moto, we're doing it, dude.
Nice. So is that the one you still have?
No, Suzuki? That was the old one.
Okay.
Okay.
That was the old Suzuki. So it was like, moto, dude, we're racing. And it was just like, let's just race constantly and keep this up. And then I'm starting to put my name out there as far as like working with addicts and starting to try to help out a few of them. And I've got a couple of them. I won't say their names, but it started going pretty slowly with that. But then if a year went by of just racing, and I was like, fuck, look what I'm doing. I'm in better shape than I've been in my whole life. Because I got fat as shit, dude. When I got hurt back east, it was like, what can I do? So I had this decision. I remember telling this chick, this nurse in the hospital, I was like, she's like, well, what are you going to do? I'm like, I'm just going to get balls out chubby. Like, I'm going for it. I'm eating just shit.
What? Yeah. That's crazy.
And like, when the treatment we were in is very rusty. It's very hard, dude. Like, not for pussies.
Right.
It was hard. And that's how it should be. And I haven't seen myself in a mirror, dude, in like 4 months. And we go to Pennsylvania to Kevin's house, dude, and he's got this full-bodied mirror. I get out of the shower naked, and I'm just like, fuck me. Look at you. Wow, this isn't good. Yeah. So I started hitting it and training hard. And when I got back with the moto and racing, it was like, you got to develop a way of living that's positive. And I was like, I've got a lot through fitness. And now like, the people I work with, I try to tell them that too. Like, fitness is so big. It's that endorphin rush, especially people that have grew up with the moto scene. Like, we need that shit, dude. Mm. That's why you see so many guys that if they just quit riding, they've been doing this shit their whole life. Like, they don't know what the fuck to do with themselves. Mm-hmm. Now they got this fat fucking beer gut, dude. They drink too much and they're wondering what's missing in their life. Like, this, you don't just stop this shit, dude. Mm-hmm. I've tried to stop so many times. It fucking stays with me and it'll never go away.
Right.
This is something that's so special about this sport. And I'm sure it's with other things, but other sports, but I don't know them. This is what I know. And there's something just so goddamn special about this community that I love so much. And it's just this moto. You don't get that feeling from anything else. I never have.
Right.
And it was great. Like, those days of riding, dude, like, they could suck, but you get in the van on the way home and you look around what's going on in that van. Like, that's so fucking special to me. Now it was like gets me to want more.
Yeah.
So, and that same with the fitness, dude, it was so great. Like, there's a couple other people that do some of the similar things. There's a company here in Reno that I think does a lot for the recovery community, Black Iron Gym.
Oh.
And they give, I believe they give like memberships to people in recovery.
Yeah.
And that broad is unbelievable, dude. She's a cool. I want to meet her bad. I want somebody to set me up and so we could rap and figure out maybe ways to come together and just kind of spread the awareness about it. But it became so much more like I do everything for myself because I want to better myself. But also I need to give this back. This was given to me. Like, none of this came out of my pocket for my treatment, for anything. So like, my new job in life is just to pay it forward.
Cool.
Like, that's what I have to do. I don't have a choice. And it's a choice that I think is just awesome.
Right.
Like, to watch somebody else turn their shit around.
I feel better.
It's nothing like it, dude.
Yeah.
Nothing like it. Cause I know what that shit feels like, dude. Like, obviously I'm open and I don't give a shit. And like, I know what I've done. And I know all the bad shit I've done.
Yeah.
I'm not that guy, dude. Like, that guy's gone. He's dead. And this guy, I like a hell of a lot more, and I'm not going to let him down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, how, like, when we were hanging out, man, with you, all the shit you'd say that you would used to say to someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, dude, you're so nice. Like, I never knew you personally before that. So I was like, dude, he's nice. Like, and then you'd say, I would have said like this if I was a punk back in the day. I'm like, holy shit, dude. Like,
oh yeah, I was a fucking prick, dude. Yeah, yeah. Especially with women, dude. Like, I was really bad about that one, and that took me a while to, like, get over that shit, and, like, I was really bad with them, because, like, I always thought, especially, like, I hate saying that whole groupie shit, or, like, but there was, you know, there was broads that followed the freestyle shit. I had zero respect for them, dude. Like, you're just a fucking pig. And, like, I treated them, like, so bad. So that was the thing, it was, like, how are you going to make amends to a bunch of people you don't know about? So it was, like, you got to get the respect and treat people the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And then that came along. And that's all work and treatment and the way you build your recovery and the way you work life. And now it's just like, I love everybody, man. You know what I mean? Like, doesn't mean I'm a pussy or a pushover and I won't stand up. But I got love for everybody, dude. Because, I mean, we're all in this world together.
Yeah.
And why do you want to fucking make it miserable?
Right.
There's enough misery out there that we don't need to treat each other like shit.
That's true.
What's different about you now compared to back then? Like, because you're obviously still around alcohol at least
all the time.
Drugs. So what's different now than back then where you're not wanting to like sneak over to the bar?
It all comes down to a decision. And I don't know, because I get this a lot, like, why is it so easy for me? And then I almost trip out on it, like, well, yeah, it is this fucking easy for me. Why isn't it this fucking easy for you? And just people are different. And it all comes down to that decision. When I made the decision that this is who I am now, and this is the life I'm going to live, I just stuck to it because I've never followed through with a promise in my life to myself, to other people. And it was like every little victory was like I was backing up that promise to myself. And I don't ever want to fucking let myself down again, and I'm just not going to. So confidence is a huge thing, and building confidence in addicts is just key. And the more confidence an addict has, the better they're going to do in life. And that's my problem with AA. I feel like they keep these guys bent down a lot into where they got to be scared of their shit. Like, you got to cut your friends out. You can't be around booze and all that shit. Like, fuck that, dude. You know what I mean? Like, no, you're the fucking one with the problem. Not everybody else. Either get over your shit. You know what I mean?
Because it's not really like sustainable, it seems like, you know, to just say, oh, you can never be around booze again. Like, you're going to be at some point.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, it's the same thing with dieting. Like, you're on some gnarly diet. Like, it might work for the month that you're on it, but like, what happens when you have to go to a birthday party and there's cake there, or like pizza, or you have to go to lunch and dinner in the same day? Like, you can't stick to the diet. You have to have something that's sustainable for you.
Oh, fully. Yeah, absolutely. And it just comes down to that decision. Like, I don't put bullshit in my system anymore. Like, whether it's drugs, alcohol, food, any of this shit. Like, don't get me wrong, I'm a fucking sweet freak, dude. And if I get started, I'm fucked. But I just don't really go down it. You know what I mean? Because I get so stoked on where I've come with my fitness and everything. And it just comes back to like that. Like, that's going to let you down a little bit. It's the same anal shit that I get, like, if I don't wake up at 4 a.m. and go hit it, or some days I won't do 2-a-days. I'm just like, you could have done that today. Like, yesterday I went running. For the first time I went running since that marathon after work yesterday, and my legs are still weeded, dude.
Really? Do you stretch and roll them out and stuff?
I do, not before I go.
Okay.
But yeah, afterwards, like that, and ice baths and things like that.
Oh, yeah.
What a difference, dude, from like just gnarly drug addicts stealing pills and shit to then like, I didn't work out twice. Like, I'm a piece of shit.
You know, I wouldn't say I would have the piece of shit feeling, but no, yeah, it is. And it's so good on this side. Like, it is, dude. I wake up every day, and that's to say, it's not like you get sober and all your problems go away. No, it doesn't.
Yeah.
But you know what the greatest thing about it is like, I've lived the worst days of my life. How bad can things really get? I should have been dead plenty of times. I didn't. I didn't kill anybody. Well, how bad is some shit really going to get? Am I not going to be able to handle it? Of course I am.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's a fucking beautiful world, dude. And I just want to keep going and keep improving and keep helping people out.
That's sick, dude. Yeah, you've came a long way. And you would have never guessed, like, if someone looked at you and just saw you hanging out, I don't think they would have ever guessed what you've been through at all. Like, you know?
And it was rough, you know, like, you always get to like the root of problems of people with addiction and things like that. And I saw a lot with my mom, and unfortunately my son saw a lot with me.
Mm-hmm.
And his, you know, he's going to be 13 next month, and I haven't seen or spoke to him in years. And that's just a consequence of my actions and the things I'm doing. And I am okay with it. It's part of my reality.
Yeah.
It's just the way it is. But, you know, I watched a lot of shit with my mom, and it was really hard, too. And this is like, when you get bound out, like, there's trauma of things, and there's just things we got to get over. And I just think the human mind is so amazing. There's ways to do it, and I just don't think people want to put enough attention or effort into things.
Right. Yeah, know? That's true. You can do a lot if you put a lot of effort into it.
Right.
It's crazy. Like, I before working out, I was like, I don't want to go to the gym. Like, I don't have no desire. Like, I don't care. Like, but then when I started going and like that endorphin rush and stuff, it's like, you feel so weird if you don't go to the gym. You feel like you're kind of like,
it like fucks you up.
Bogged down. Yeah. And you like you every day that like exhausted feeling feels good. Like, that's like the refresher for the day for me.
Nice.
Yeah. So is it time?
It's time, dude.
Sumancy grab, that was freestyle song right there. The crowd goes crazy. Tech One Designs shitty Yelp review of the week. Tech One Designs for all your graphic needs. Hit it with it, V's.
All right, so usually we'll ask the guest, like, what's your favorite restaurant or what's your favorite something, and then we look up on Yelp and then we'll give the shittiest review they have on there.
Oh, cool.
But I think we kind of have to do it on Shay's in light of this.
Right.
So, all right, so here's one. Richard T. from Houston, Texas. And this dude's profile picture, you can see he's at a lake and he's holding his shoes like he's ankle deep in water. Like, just imagine that dude at Shay's anyway. So, and then he says, complete shite. He doesn't say shit. Complete shite. Ordered car bomb, got 1/3 filled pint glass and nearly filled shot, mostly Irish cream, very little whiskey. Asked if they were out of Guinness, was told that's how car bombs always are everywhere. Dropped the shot in, barely filled half the glass. Nope. I've traveled for work my whole adult life for over 25 years, visited more pubs, good and bad, than the barmaid is years old, and rarely felt a need for a less than a good review. Kind of felt BS'd by a gaming pub that obviously doesn't know shite. Good luck. Won't return soon. Happy St. Patty's Day, Eve. Glad I've been to a couple actual Irish pubs, being in Reno, that aren't a waste of time to spend the weekend with my beautiful redheaded wife and my Irish ass.
Well, that's why he says shite.
Shite. Yeah.
It sounds like he was drunk riding that thing.
He may have been. I guess the car bomb wasn't as bad as he thought.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
I was trying to find a review while you guys were talking with Coke in it, but I think they probably like...
they probably pull those ones. Yeah, like, but yeah, then fucking how many bags have stuck to shoes in that place?
Okay, I've only been there once when the Casualties played there like 2 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
I was like, oh, I gotta go. Yeah, but it was pretty scummy.
Oh, yeah. I was, they were on Warped Tour when I was on.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Went on an LSD trip with Jake.
Whoa.
That's crazy, dude. Damn, on tour, man. You did that?
Yeah. That was actually before they played that night, too.
Oh, dang.
Those guys are crazy.
He's like, here, take this. I was like, fuck, all right.
19-year-old kid. Hey, here you go.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Damn, dude, I think that's the least amount that we've talked on an episode.
Yeah,
I was like, just so though. Into the story.
Yeah,
like I felt like I was listening to the podcast.
Yeah,
but I was like, fuck, we need to be interviewing Nora more. I'm like, nah, he's got it. Like, the story just kept going.
Dude, you did so good at telling the story. Thank you. Dude, you gotta write a book or something, dude.
Well, this is actually, it's kind of funny you said that, because I started getting some ideas, and I leave for the East Coast in into September. My mentor, Kevin's having twin baby girls here. But I want to go help out and get back into part of it and just kind of be there with him. I know he's got some pretty fast young kids and some promising talent there as far as just their minds go, as far as they're ready. They've already got some time in.
Mm-hmm.
And some guys I can work with and take racing and riding and stuff. So I'm going to go back there for a while. I just got a one-way ticket, so I'm not really putting on any faith on like when I'm coming back. But I started getting this idea of like everything right now is like amazing. If you have a good grant writer, you can make some serious money and get some serious funding together.
Yeah.
I started thinking about like, yeah, I do want to do the book eventually, because there's just, I mean, like I don't know how long we've been going, but there's so fucking much more. But eventually something like that I'd like to get into, but I think there's not enough as far as like grassroots goes, as far as how ugly addiction is and seeing the people. So I started thinking these things, like all these documentaries out there, and it's like they come from a standpoint that just doesn't seem so realistic to me. And I started thinking about making this documentary or just this film, and I want to go to the worst places in the country.
Like what would be an example?
The most dangerous drug-addled streets there is. And I want to go talk to people. And I want to document it. I don't want to go with a crew. I want to do it on my own.
That's so gnarly, bro.
And I want to go. And my consensus, like why I want to do it, is I want people to hear that. I guarantee you every person I talk to has gone through some kind of trauma, because none of these people were just born. Like, you're not just a born, well, it's maybe a little bit if you're, you know, become addicted right off the bat. But leading up to how things happen and how these people live. I don't think, yeah, you might see it and there might be a show you watch and you watch these guys in an alleyway shooting dope or things like that, but that's not enough. Like a kid that's starting to go down a bad path, like the first thing I do if I get a new kid, I'll take him down to Record Street, dude. Dude. You want to see some life, homie?
Yeah.
You want to see some real life and how shit works? You know, like, this is how it is if they don't go to jail, and they're just, most of these kids are pretty soft anyways, and they go to jail, that'll kind of straighten them out for a little bit. But seeing and smelling these people and seeing the life of it, like, that's where it's at, and I want to dive a little deeper into that. So I kind of have this idea of starting to put something together like that.
It's a great idea, dude.
That sounds so gnarly, dude.
But then also having like the success of it as well. Like, yeah. you can't have, you cannot just not have the success of it.
Right.
Because there is a lot of success stories out there. I mean, this epidemic is fucking huge, dude. A lot of great people out there that are kicking ass and coming back and being like, you know, this was how it was. This is, you know, mm-hmm. it doesn't need to be like that. And look what you can come up with. And just, I think there needs to be a lot more hope put out there than stigma. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy, dude. I'm sure you'll affect a lot of lives doing that sometime in the future. I was just thinking while we were recording, like, I can't relate at all. Like, we're fucking total opposites. And I'm sure that there's someone listening to this podcast, probably many people, like someone that's starting to go down that path or has already been down that path. Yeah. And like, this conversation is going to like open up their eyes.
Oh yeah. You know? And honestly, for anybody listening that knows somebody, or I'm sure you do, somebody knows somebody that's going through it. It's so big now, and feel free to reach out to me. I don't care what it is, where it is. I'll even give out my personal number. I don't care.
That's what you do, right?
Feel free to reach out to me and talk if you just need to hear another perspective, or you need help, or you need help finding a loved one treatment. I'll be there for you, and we'll figure it out. And my number is 775-600-9126. And just Ryan Hansen, and we'll figure some things out. There's plenty of help out there, and let's put something together if you got somebody.
That's dope, dude.
That's awesome.
Change someone's life. I'm sure you already have changed someone's life, honestly.
Well, I mean, I changed some perspectives, and I hope to help some more. You know, a lot of people change their perspectives, and that's what I like when I hear those things. Like, you wouldn't expect me to be like that guy doing that shit.
Yeah.
So it's like, yeah, I mean, things can be bad. Things can be really fucking great too. You know, like the old man, my family, they had a hard time figuring it out. Like, my dad's not that guy, you know?
Yeah.
And now he's like, he sees the things I do. He hears some of the shit and he hears feedback from people. And it's just like, wow, he starts to understand it a little bit more.
Yeah.
Like, it's not so easy of just saying, I quit. I don't want to, I'm not going to drink anymore.
Right.
You know, there's a lot more that goes into this.
Yeah. And people like, that have never dealt with addiction like that think, why isn't it that easy, you know?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it's just like, you don't even, never even been there, so.
Right.
It's just something you can't relate to. I think that was a crazy good, like, whole episode. Like, people, it'll be hard for people to, like, do whatever they're doing while listening to this. It's one of those where you're just sitting and, like, thinking about what Ryan's talking about, because so like good, you know.
So how old are you now, dude?
I'm 35.
35. So we always ask every guest, we forgot fucking Zinx last week, but so in your 35 years of life experience, and have had a fuckload of it, what is your one piece of advice you can give to anyone, like, no matter what they're dealing with in life, no matter where they're at, successful, down in the dumps, whatever, like, what's your one takeaway from life, that your best piece of life advice?
Get honest with yourself. I think being honest and figuring out who you are deep down, put all the other bullshit of like what people think you should be or who you're supposed to be, and figure out who that person you are is and who you want to be, and don't put any limitations on it, and be 100% honest. Because if you sit there and you look at yourself like, I'm a fucking junkie, I fuck people over constantly, your soul, you still got that little bit of you that says, you know that that's not right, and you know that that's not a good way of living. And if you want to fucking change it, get honest with yourself and be and put in the work to just positivity, man, live a positive life.
Cool, dude.
I'm not sure if I really answered that. No, you
did. Yeah. I mean, that's, you just related it to like the bottom, but I mean, that's still relatable for people that are being successful. Like, you still need to like reevaluate and say, okay, is this really what I want to be doing? Like, what can I be doing better? You know, who am I?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, shit, us as human beings are constantly evolving, constantly. So why do you want to, like, why do you want to put a roadblock in front of that shit? Like, roll with it. Figure the next one out. Let's get better. Let's all get better each day. Put something in, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Super cool.
Cool, dude. Well, we'll wrap it up. We're almost at an hour and a half, looks like. But thanks for coming on, dude.
Yeah,
that was awesome. Absolutely, thanks for sharing, man. Your story. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that was a good show. We'll have to do a part two.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, we can do that. Yeah, once you get back from the East Coast, back on.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us, keep us updated on how you did over there and all that stuff. So,
or even a phone line in.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah,
absolutely.
Cool. All right, dude. Another quick shout out to our sponsors at Walden's Coffee House on Instagram, harmoniouscbd.com. Use code GOTOBED for 10% off at checkout. Make sure to rate this podcast 5 stars and leave us a negative written review so we can read it for review of the week. GOTOBEDpodcast.com for everything relating to this podcast. And
get some merch. Get some merch. Make sure to 5 stars is important. And number one thing is tell a friend about this show or your favorite show or
and especially, about the podcast. Especially this episode. If you guys know anyone that's going through some shit, definitely send them this episode because you know that that's probably exactly what they need to hear right now. So,
and they'll probably hear it like listening without people around, obviously, because you have to have headphones in and whatnot. So it'll be good, dude. Tell a friend.
Cool. I think that's about it.
All right, everybody, get a pillow, get a blanket, go to bed, dude.
Good night.
Night.
How's your ass?
Cut that check, cut that check, cut that check, cut that check. I need my check, I need my check, I need my check, I need my check, I need my in, I need my in, I need my check, I need my check. Cut that check, cut that check, cut that check.